Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, recording on January the 31st, a Friday night here, a couple of weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting, a few more weeks from that away from the WBC, a few weeks away from the NFBC main event, and of course, opening day in less than a couple of months. I am your co-host, Vlad Sedler, RotoGut, and I'm joined by my homie, my boy, from NorCal, who's got a lot of stuff going on with his home team, Jason Anthony. What's up, bud?
What up, Vlad? I missed you last week, but Mr. Zimmerman did a great job filling in for me and appreciate him coming on. Another great episode. Looking forward to talking some baseball, talking some corner infield, talking some Giants. January 31st, which means we're close to spring training, which means we're all excited, and then we're all going to get all this injury news. First couple weeks of spring training, we're all going to be irritated. So, you know, here comes the emotional ups and downs coming into spring training, and then all the news. How do you sift through it? But, yeah, we are coming up quick on draft season. I know a lot of people are hot and heavy in DCs and OCs too, including I've drafted one online championship, but four DCs. So, I'm excited. Great time of year.
It is. It's especially a great time of year because we're doing a lot of drafting, a lot of research, tier articles, lots of really great content out there here at FTN, of course, at other places. But you mentioned it. It's the time of year where there isn't a lot of injury news. So everything is really positive. You got some new guys on new teams. And you're right. Soon enough, there will be the spring training news, WBC. Of course, we hope everybody gets out of there unscathed. A few players not playing in it. Shohei Ohtani, Miguel Rojas is pretty unhappy about it. And part of it. We do have some slight health news that has impacted ADP on somebody significant, and that's actually Blake Snell of the Dodgers, who Dave Roberts just wants to be cautious on. Not that he's hurt specifically, but that because of his heavy workload there towards the end of the year, in the playoffs, they want to take things slowly for him, so he might be just a little bit behind schedule. But I immediately dropped him, not even hastily, just immediately to a spot where he's probably going to be going closer to the 80, 110 range as opposed to the 60-ish area that he was in originally. So I think I have like a 103, around, I think, guys he belongs with more. And there was already some always concern with him, right? Because he's only had two fully healthy seasons. You know him as a Giants fan, of course, from his days there. There's always something wrong with Blake Snell. And the way that the roster, this pitching staff is constructed on the Dodgers, they have so many guys that, at some point, River Ryan, Gavin Stone, like you name it, they can bring guys in. They do not have to force these guys to be going 160 plus innings.
Yeah, he's an interesting one because I don't think anyone drafting him before the news was expecting 180 innings. I know I had a couple shares of him early just because he felt like the last high strikeout, low ERA guy. I think I got him in the sixth round. I don't understand the news dropping him as much as it is just because it's not theoretically an injury. We don't know, we haven't read between the lines yet on the news, but I mean, if he goes 130, 140 innings this year and, makes 24 starts, 25 starts, he's going to be extreme value. The Dodgers scare me. They do have a lot of arms, but they have a lot of arms till they don't, right? Yamamoto's coming off a huge season of innings, plus the playoffs, plus the WBC coming up. That scares me. We don't know with Ohtani. Emmett Sheehan's still not proven innings-wise. So, they have a lot of question marks, including Tyler Glass Joe or Glass Now.
One of those.
So, the Dodgers are fascinating. They have so much talent, and how are they going to use that? They have a lot of prospects. Justin Robleski, I've drafted a lot of because I think he's going to get an opportunity, and he was lights out in the playoffs. But, you look last year, Blake Snell threw 61 innings in the regular season, and then probably another, I didn't look on Fangraphs, but probably another 25 in the playoffs. That is concerning, lightening the load, because that wasn't a huge innings year for him. So I'm going to wait for some more news, wait for some spring training, see him actually throwing, but I'm going to have to stop drafting him until I see him throwing again.
And then traveling up north about 6.5 hours, the San Francisco Giants have made a couple of moves, one specifically today, one yesterday, Thursday was, or maybe it was Wednesday, but Harrison Bader is signed with the Giants, and Luis Arias, Arias has signed with the Giants as well, projected to lead off, bumps Jung-Hoo Lee off the leadoff spot, at least from what is projected now. Of course, that's not going to stop me from drafting all the Jung-Hoo Lee as much as I can. But this is a really interesting lineup. Saw someone talking about, you know, Logan Webb Googling, you know, how do I induce fly balls and interesting things, because Arias is not exactly known for his defense. But talk to us about these two moves from a real life perspective, and also how it impacts in fantasy, who might bump off.
Yeah, I mean, as a Giants fan, I'm excited that they're, you know, putting a better product on the field. Harrison Bader is going to be fun to watch. He had a huge improvement the last 2 years in bat speed. I think he's all the way up to 71st percentile in bat speed, and it showed with his power, but he's going to strike out a lot. I'd be interested how that ballpark affects his power. But defensively, he's going to be a huge asset for them when he's healthy. One thing we know is Bader's not going to play 150 games. There's an injury coming. So they have Drew Gilbert that can play center field. They have Lee that can move back to center from right. But when Bader's healthy, it makes the team much better. Luis Arias, I'm excited about on the offensive side, but as equally disappointed on the defensive side. One of the Giants' initiatives was to get more athletic and better defensively. They did that with Bader, and I think they lost that with Arias, because Casey Schmidt, who was going to play second, was an elite second baseman, elite infielder defensively. So I think it's going to hurt the Logan Webb types, the ground ball types, second base. That being said, I think there's a non-zero chance that Arias might platoon a little bit with Casey Schmidt, because he really was not great against left-handed pitching, and the Giants lineup in general struggled against left-handed pitching last year, and they need to figure that out. So I'll be very interested in that, but very sneaky, decent lineup now, which is, we haven't said that in a while, so, but health dependent.
Yeah. And with Harrison Bader, we've seen him fall into platoons since his Cardinal days, and he's a right-handed hitter. And so, you know, one of the things when looking at a player changing teams, joining teams, or joining a new team, you want to really double check your priors, right? So for me, I remember seeing a lot of lineups where Bader was sitting against righties, and I'm like, oh, so he must not be good at right against righties. And in fact, that's really not the case. Over the course of his career, his WRC plus against lefties and righties is pretty similar. It's pretty close. It's a little above average against lefties. It's 106. It's a little below average, 92 against righties. And then last season, he was actually better against righties than lefties. Even hit 300 against them. So the other key part of it is his defense. He's an exceptional defender. And that's just a bat they're gonna want to keep in the lineup. So as long as he's healthy, he'll be in there. And it's interesting. This is an interesting team. Not part of our corner infield discussion, but for whatever reason, it's interesting that I kind of like Willy Adames for the price. Remember this time last year, we were talking about, I mean, you liked him, you were excited about him joining. I was like, I don't know, the batting average hit. And I feel like there's some lessons learned from maybe from Cal Raleigh. And obviously not to say that Adames is going to hit 60 home runs, because he won't, but there's ways to mitigate some batting average risk. And sometimes when the player is so cheap and you're getting 32 with 100, like, you know, you got to take that gift sometimes.
Yeah. And, we say this every year, but we kind of gloss over it. You said this a little bit ago. As fantasy players, we really need to pay attention to defensive ability. That will keep players on the field through slumps. And, you know, it's not a stat that we're looking at in our 5x5, but, man, it is such an important metric as far as the long leash that these guys have to play through these slumps and to continue to get better. So I agree with that.
One other note, some interesting stuff going on with the White Sox. So they're bringing in Jared Kelenic to or Kelnick, I'm sorry, Jared Kelnick. I haven't said his name in a few years, and I remember his correct pronunciation now. He is going to try to make the team, but things are getting a little tougher because they keep signing outfielders or trading for them. They traded for Luis Angel Acuña, Ronald's little brother. He is going to battle it out for center field over there with the White Sox. He's now moved into the VDP 500, which are my rankings over on FTN Fantasy. And he's getting some rise. He's getting some helium. But now Austin Hayes has been signed. So that's another good bat, another one that is a little bit better hitting the lefties than the righties, but probably going to play most days. The White Sox lineup is getting slightly intriguing in this offseason by the day.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Hayes was – I was a big fan of him last year. There was a lot of positive coach speak from the Cincinnati manager. I got to believe he's going to be their everyday right fielder. I don't believe he can play center, so it'll be interesting how that shakes out with Acuña, Brooks Baldwin, Derek Hill. There could be some value there. I know Acuña is going, I think, top 300 now, which is really hard to swallow, but I really think Austin Hayes could be a fantasy value this year in a sneaky, decent Chicago White Sox lineup. Top to bottom, they're looking better and better, so you know, that's the one nice thing about fantasy. Bad teams, you can still find fantasy relevant.
Yes, indeed. And of course, former Dodger Miguel Vargas is projected to hit cleanup in that lineup. Edward Quiro, he went to Driveline, is obviously part of the team. Kyle Teal, you know, old man Benintendi now. Not even that old. He's not even 32, by the way. And then Munetaka Murakami, the guy that every projection system's got for 30 plus with a 220. He's in that lineup as well. By the way, are you targeting and drafting Murakami at all?
You know, I try to avoid the overseas hitters the first year just because there's such an adjustment. We watched it with our, you know, Jung Ho Lee, you know, big fan of, we both like him a lot, and he still hasn't feel like he's fully adjusted. Major league pitching so different, the velocity so different that I really avoid those players the first year until they show it. Pitchers from overseas, I actually target because of the deception that they bring in. And there's no book on them, but hitter wise, I will not be having any of the overseas hitters.
All right. So let's get to the meat, the potatoes. We're not vegetarian here on of this show. And this is these are the corner infield tiers. So we're talking about all the first basemen, all the third basemen. We're looking at NFBC, average draft position. We are looking at the position, the positions there as well. And yeah, I mean, let's get to it. You know, I write my tier series every January and February going through the positions. I usually group them, the corners. This year I did something a little different. I showed the tiers separated to kind of see the differences with the tier drop-offs and the, you know, how deep the positions are. But a quick look at last season, the top two earners among corner infielders, they were Jose Ramirez and, of course, Junior Caminero, coming in at around a 70-80 ADP. Those were the two big guys. Ramirez just getting it done every single year. After that, it was Pete Alonso and then Josh Naylor with the surprising 30 stolen bases. And then, you know, Cody Bellinger, Manny Machado. But all in all, like if you were to look at the Fangraphs player rate or looking at 15 teamers, there were 21 guys that earned $15 or more. And 15 of those corners earned 20 or more. And of course, there were some really, really good surprises at the position, including some that were picked up in FAB.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at that list, and a name that really jumps out, and he was not first base last year. He was first base and catcher, I believe, was Wilson Contreras. He's going to be really interesting going into this year, going to Boston. I didn't realize I had him. He had a solid year. I didn't realize it was as valuable as it was. And if he can somehow stay healthy, he's find a way to miss 15, 20, 30 games every year. In that Boston lineup with the Green Monster, he could be pretty sneaky for us in fantasy this year because everyone's discounting him because he lost that catcher eligibility. But, you know, you throw him right behind Michael Busch, Michael Garcia, Vinny Pasquantino, like that's some pretty good company there to really, you know, be in the presence of. And the draft cost, I think he's about around 14, 15 right now in the draft champions. It seems pretty cheap for what he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's the Red Sox cleanup hitter. He's got great hitters in front of him, Roman Anthony, he's got Trevor Story in the lineup around him. Jaron Duran is still there. It's a really good team, a really good offense. And listen, Contreras he's never had more than 600 plate appearances. It's been with the Cubs and, you know, he's been in the NL Central for so long. And this is a nice little change. Maybe it takes him a little bit to adjust, but the key for him to make profit is health, really, I think is all it is. Cause this is a guy that can get you a sneaky, finally career year in his 30s, like get you that 3,100 with a decent average that doesn't kill you. So definitely a big fan. Other guys, obviously some of the bigger surprising names, guys that earned us exceptional profit. I mean, Nick Kurtz, obviously, you spent $300 in Fab. It was worth every penny of it because he was, he didn't even play a full season. And he was basically your first baseman four. He earned $23, just absolutely mashes it, has great projections anywhere you look this year. The ballpark hasn't changed. Eugenio Suarez, still unsigned. He earned $24. He was the number four third baseman, just a touch behind Manny Machado last year. Kind of slowed down a little bit when he got to Seattle. But sitting there around 100, 120. And then of course, Tyler Soderstrom and Michael Busch. Those are two guys who were, first round picks, top prospects, power prospects. And they both came into their own this year, basically, Soderstrom's first full season. And Michael Busch is honestly, it feels like he's been around forever. It's only his second full season.
Former Dodger great Michael Busch there, huh? Fond memories. And, then you have the declining Bryce Harper, according to his general manager, which is still fascinating to me that he came out and said that. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting group. There's not a lot of pop-ups other than the Kurtz, Ben Rice, obviously. But, the top guys kind of performed. Cody Bellinger, just a solid season, $24.5, ADP 80 last year. Probably going to be value again this year. So it's an interesting group, and be fun to dive into kind of projections for this year.
So looking at the first baseman and third baseman, just from a macro perspective, it feels to me, or at least that looks by ADP, that first base is really pretty top heavy, because you've got 12 guys in the top 100. You've got Vlad Guerrero Jr., Nick Kurtz, Pete Alonso early. Then you got catcher eligible Ben Rice with Bryce Harper, Matt Olson, and Freddie Freeman, the veterans, Rafael Devers, the veteran, Josh Naylor, Pasquantino, Tyler Soderstrom, and Salvador Perez. That's 12 first baseman eligible. Let's say 10, right? Because we're not counting Rice and Perez. We want to use those guys as a catcher. Whereas at third base, it's a really much different picture, because you've got the first round Jose Ramirez, the borderline first round Junior Caminero. Then it's Jazz Chisholm there in the middle of the second round, and you're going to be using him at second base. Then it's Manny Machado, and then you've got like a 50-spot drop-off to like Austin Riley, Mikel Garcia, and then another like 40-spot drop-off to like Bregman, Suarez, Westberg. So there's a big difference there just at the top, looking at the top 100 overall.
Yeah, I actually want to ask you a question about that. Why would you want to play Jazz at second instead of third in the speed landscape that we're trying to get to as many steals as we have? Isn't that a huge advantage drafting Jazz, is to put him at third, with 20 or 30 steals, compared to most third basemen on that list is getting, very low single digits?
Ooh, that's a great question. I love that question. I love how I just kind of went for something and did, and just like from like old thoughts, like old habits, and didn't, I mean, that's a great call out. That's a really, really good point. Yeah, I guess so. The one thing I would say is I think I'm not as concerned about stolen bases as in past years. I feel like after, the rule change a few years ago, there were, a lot of us just didn't have enough stolen bases, but it's one of the It's one of the most available resources on the waiver wire. Like somebody in your 12 teamer will like drop a Caleb Durbin. There's always, you know, Jake Mangum will be there in your 15 teamer. There'll always be someone there you can use to get stolen bases. And so many guys are getting you, you know, 20-20 these days. Like we had a record season of 30-30 guys, 20-20 guys. So I feel like stolen bases are a lot, you know, easier to come by, whereas like batting average and other things are a scarcer commodity. That partially answers your question, but it doesn't fully, which means that's something I'm going to have to look at. And probably, I think you might be right here.
Well, and I think that's been a blind spot for me with Jose Ramirez. He's always too low in my list. But those 40 steals you can get from third base, steals is always my biggest weakness coming out of the draft into the year. I have a hard time getting up to the number. I'm always, you know, 20 to 40 short. And then I end up trying to fix it by going a rabbit. And we all know the rabbits never work. Never say never. But Chandler Simpson, I'm talking to you. But it's interesting because the first base, the third base, the premium power positions, if you can get speed out of those, which most of the guys on this list do not have very much speed, if any, I think it's a real big differentiator. So it's just an interesting game theory conversation more than a player conversation, I guess.
Yeah, I think what it is also for me is that the second base position is also pretty pretty shallow. And it's not just this year in drafts, but also in previous years. Like that's the one position I'm really willing to punt. I always feel like it's, you know, recently it's been second base and third base, but second base, I feel like in the builds that I've made, I always catch myself drafting a third baseman and then waiting on my non-Jazz teams. I'll wait for a later guy, like a Marcus Simeon, Polanco, Gleyber Torres, you know, Matt McClain, one of those guys. But it's because they're, you know, it's the same thing. Like there are only three second basemen in the top 100. It's just Jazz, Marte, and Terang. So that's probably my main reason.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a fun conversation. You know, another bat like that is Mikel Garcia. You know, not a lot of power, but really increasing it. But his value is mostly in the stolen bases. And I think that is why his ADP is at 78 right now. If you glance at the profile with, you know, a 5% barrel rate, 91 exit velocity, 99 caught stealing, you just, I don't think that'd be a fifth round profile, but you look at the improvements and you look at the speed at third base, and I think it's actually value there from what you're looking at.
Yes. And I want to definitely touch on him because he's a profile that kind of stuck out at me stuck out to me. But just kind of running through, you know, the tiers, players you like, you don't like. In the first tier, if you group the first and third baseman together, just looking at the guys in the top 30 overall, that's the first two rounds of a 15-teamer. It's 2.5 rounds in a 12-teamer. Jose Ramirez, the rock-solid, every, you know, $35-plus dollars every single year, returning first-round value. About him, how do you feel when you're in a draft and he's sitting there comparing to, I don't know, Ronald Acuna Jr., Corbin Carroll, one of the pitchers? You know, is he somebody you're investing in again this year?
I think, again, I have another blind spot, Vlad, and it's mainly due to the age and the exit velocity, the kind of the hard hit profile, the 7% barrel rate, 89 mile an hour exit velocity, it's not pretty, but man, does he maximize that power profile that he has. And then, like I said, with my risk or my biggest weakness being stolen bases, I really think I need to put him right next to those guys at third base because, you know, obviously outfield, we can get steals anywhere. But I think I need to really do a hard look at Jose Ramirez. It feels like the year I finally get on him is the year he's going to decline them. I'm trying to do the year too early thing, but he's only 33, so it's not like he's on the backside yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredible. If you're just looking at last five seasons, I mean, his average stat line, it's 32 homers and 32 stolen bases. It's 100-plus runs, 100-plus RBI, and .278. And he's had he's always a plus in the batting average. Somehow he gets it done with the team around him that you look at it, it's like, you know, how's he doing this, right? Like, you go and you look at the roster resource right now, and it's something called the George Valera projected at second between him and Stephen Kwan. So,
It might be the worst Guardians team that's been around him. So it'll be interesting if his counting stats get hurt because of it.
And I kid, I do know who George Valera is, and I have been doing a little bit of drafting of him, and not just because he's second in roster resource. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Junior Caminero, I kind of have these guys flip-flopped. I could be wrong on this. Do you feel that Caminero's, the move to the Trop really shouldn't affect his power, right? But does that still mean that he's an automatic lock for 40 home runs again? Like, what do you expect from him?
You know, it's just not enough data to know what we're getting out of him. I think we touched on it on our episode we did with Mr. Mager about, who would be the first round bust that you might see. And both him and I thought Caminero might be the guy. I think going back to the Trop's a big deal from Steinbrenner Field. That opposite field home run that was pretty easy at Steinbrenner Field is going to get hurt. Now, when I say a decline, was it 36 homers compared to 45? It's still going to be a really strong profile. I have Vlad above him as well. So, I think that's a correct ranking. I think people are thinking that's who he is. And, we just saw it with Vlad at Dunedin, I think 3 or 4 years ago, when that profile really backed down once it got back to a major league ballpark. Similar, not a high launch angle, hits the crap out of the ball. So great player, but yeah, 45 homers, I would not project that. I'd say probably mid 30s.
And one of the things it's very important, we see all the best players, the NFBC Hall of Famers, Mike Mager included, who our colleague who's now been inducted to the Hall of Fame, or will be when we go to Vegas. The whole saying about you don't want to lose your league in the early rounds. Like, of course, if there's like a legendary player, like a guy that like the Ohtani, the Judge, those type numbers, the Acuñas from 3 years ago, like you go for that upside, sure. But also, there's something that's really solid about a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. who so far is just money with games. He's in there all the time. And he's always going to hit. He's averaging nearly 700 plate appearances since 2021. That's almost 160 games per year. He's never been on the IL, knock on wood, jinx. And listen, probably not going to hit a low 23 home runs again. But even if he doesn't, even if it's like 26, 27, whatever, everything else will be great. This is a guy that hits 290, still in his prime. What is he, like 26, 27? Runs, RBIs, like he's great. There's nothing wrong with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the second.
Yeah, I mean, I think people look at those 23 homers, last 3 years, 23, 30, 26, and they get a little skittish about drafting a guy that high that's not going to hit in the mid-30s, low 40 home run projections, and then only throwing in 3 to 5 steals. So, that batting average is so secure. That K rate is so good. The zone contact is so good. I mean, his batting average isn't going anywhere, just unless he gets extremely unlucky BABIP wise. You watched him in the playoffs in the World Series, and I know probably you as a Dodger fan were just scared to death every time he came up because he was so locked in. If he looks anything like that, Vlad, I mean, he's going to be MVP type, much less, value in the second round.
I mean, his dad was like my favorite non-Dodger growing up. And then, his son is now my favorite non-Dodger now. And just it was crazy just seeing the Dodgers in the World Series against him. It's just, you're always rooting for him to get hits. And this is the one time when you're not. It was definitely really interesting. Nick Kurtz and Pete Alonso, they wrap up that kind of first tier. Let me hear your thoughts. I think where I'm at. Like, I'm a huge, huge, huge Orioles guy this year. I don't know if maybe somewhere deep subconsciously that I am not that I'm so into Pete Alonso and in that Oriole orange because I was a complete fade and had him like 20 passes ADP and completely bombed on him, and now I'm like trying to make up for it somehow. But I know it's not that. It can't be. At least I don't think so. Like guy just produces runs, and he's going to have Gunner and Westberg and Holiday. And, Rushman, this team is loaded. Like, how can you not love Pete?
Yeah. Big meat Pete. He's interesting. I haven't taken any Kurtz or Pete this year because I really like, the value a little lower on the first baseman in the next group. The Bryce Harper, the Rafael Devers, even Vinny Pascantino. But you look at Pete's profile last year and his increase in the exit velocity, his increase in the barrel rate, almost a 20% barrel rate. That's getting up in the Judge territory. 18.9% barrel rate. Really, you know, makes good contact in the zone. My only concern is going to Baltimore is one, the ballpark, which shouldn't affect his power, but trying to justify the new contract. There's something to that with baseball players and pressing. I know that there's a lot of fantasy analysts that really try to avoid guys on big contracts the first year. I don't necessarily avoid them, but I do pay attention to it. So I don't think he's a 270 batting average, but I also don't think he's a 220 batting average. So mm-hmm. if you can write in 250 and, you know, 40 homers, 90 runs and 110 RBIs, you know, sign me up if, you know, I'm not sure who to pick at the end of the first round, because he's going to be really good in that lineup. To that point, Baltimore's got the best bench in the majors too, with Ryan Mountcastle, Tyler O'Neill, Jeremiah Jackson. You know, there's some really good players not playing, and I'm still kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on the Orioles and how that roster is going to shake out. There's still some good players that don't have playing time.
Yeah, I need another pitcher. I know they're tied into some Framber Valdez signing rumors. There's a good point to that. Mentioned there about these hitters that are especially, you know, transferring leagues, right? That you just think, oh, what's the big deal? NL to AL, NL to NL, but it really is a thing. And we saw so many guys that moved to new places last year struggled. Christian Walker, I mean, there were countless last year. A lot of them ended up figuring out eventually, those that didn't get hurt. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to struggle. I mean, there's so many new contracts, guys in new uniforms this year. It's crazy. And maybe some of them will take a little bit longer to adjust. And it might take Pete some time, but this is a much better division, I think, for him. It's his home park with the walls, and it's the, you know, hitting a Yankee Stadium, hitting at Fenway. I don't know. There's, you know, you got to play some of those AL Central teams more. It's a lot better hitting environment. So I do like him. And also it's a roster construction thing, because I recently have not been into drafting Yamamoto or Chris Sanchez where they're going, like in that area. And I don't feel amazing about clicking on Jazz Chisholm or Trey Turner, or, you know, I'm fine with Kyle Schwarber, you know, Cal Raleigh. So he's been kind of my default there. Like, I start with an Acuna and then I add an Alonso, and then go after some pitching. I usually feel pretty good about that. And power is typically, the last few years, for whatever reason, has been my weakness.
Yeah, that's a really fun start with the speed and power. And, you know, Nick Kurtz's profile is amazing. Again, I don't believe he's a 290 hitter. I think he's closer to a 250 hitter. There's some swing and miss there. I root for the guy, you know, being Northern California, you know, Sacramento Athletics. I want him to do great. I want him to hit 50 homers, but I don't see myself having any shares this year at the draft cost. It just seems way too expensive.
You, by the way, I got to give you props, man. Something you said last year, and you obviously, I love the analytical viewpoint of ballparks and things like stuff that I sometimes don't really even look into. And you told me about that minor league park right around this time last year. You really got my ears perked about the positive batting luck, batting average luck some of these guys are going to have because of the way, what is it, the foul?
It was the foul territory at the Coliseum. Cost him, I don't know how many at bats, because
it was just pure genius, because I was already in on these A's guys, and you were like, oh, you said that, I'm like, oh my god, now, dude, no, I'm all over these guys. And you had like Shea Langeliers was like a 230 guy, he hit 270, you know, Kurtz, I mean, everybody was just like hit Tyler Soderstrom, like he was locked in for like 225 by everybody, and he had a good batting average season. And that can extend it again this year. So that was a really good call. Like, those are the kinds of edges that I love to work with. And especially when it's like Eureka moment, it's really a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I mean, we're playing against the best of the best. So every little bit helps, right? Just one little nuance.
In tier two, tier three, let's group these guys together. They're going usually between 35 overall and 100 overall. Auction value wise, you're looking at about $15, $25. In a 15-team league, maybe $1 or $2 more in a 12. So you've got Manny Machado. We talked about Ben Rice last week with Jeff Zimmerman, the catchers. Machado, Harper, Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, Rafael Devers, Austin Riley. That's a really, really good set of veterans. That's where you're shopping?
Yeah. I hate to sound like a Giants homer, but I've been a big Devers proponent so far this year. I don't understand the profile going in the third round or in the fifth round. I think he should be going in the third round. He played 163 games last year, which is pretty, talk about taking your glove and your bat every day and showing up. And he was not right. He was not right, but he got traded to the Giants. He had a shoulder issue and he played through it. But I look at his numbers, and the strikeout rate goes up, the zone contact rate goes down. Those are correlated. But the barrel rate up to 16%, the hard hit rate up to 56%. The O swing is actually down from 33 2 years ago to 25. People are really worried that he's not a 270 hitter anymore, and they're worried about that ballpark. That ballpark is not going to phase that power. He's going to be a monster, and I would safely say he's going to hit over 30 and have over 100 RBIs. And you give me that in the fifth round. Again, the biggest issue, no speed, but I'll figure that out if you give me Devers in the fifth round.
I have a friend, Adam Rosenberg, in more on the betting side of things. He's got a podcast called Babies at Bet, Handygraphs, cool website. And I saw him post something about, a futures bet on Devers for RBI. And at first I laughed. I'm like, a San Francisco Giant, like leading, the American, National League in RBIs when you've got Otani and Freeman and all these,
Name more Dodgers. You forgot Tucker.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The guy that actually will lead the team in RBIs, Kyle Tucker. The guy just produces like every year. And it's funny because I was giving him crap this time last year when we were doing this corner infield thing. I was like, I'm out on him altogether because the vibe wasn't right. Right. Like there were the trade stuff. They're not wanting to play in a new position, the shoulder stuff, both shoulders, in fact. And dude, yeah, 163 games. He did it.
Yeah. And then you got Freddie Freeman there who continues to fall in drafts. His ADP is probably closer to 90 come main event season. I'm actually very, in on him, especially the second year off the ankle surgery. He's definitely on the backside of the career, but you talk about a safe batting average with the RBIs in that lineup. And then I don't think Josh Naylor can steal 30 bags again. I just really don't. Bryce Harper, I don't know what to do with him. He should be so much better stats-wise than he is. But that whole group is very interesting. And now with the walls coming in Kansas City, Vinny Pasquantino, a good batting average guy, if he can sneak a couple more homers, he's got 32 homers last year. Launch angle keeps rising, barrel keeps rising. That's a profile that could be sneaky, sneaky good this year. Especially going, pick 80, what is he, pick 89 right now. So there might be some value there as well.
Yeah, and we can't love everybody, right? And you know how it works, something will happen, things that you just don't even expect, right? Like Bryce Harper plays 160 games and finally gets those 100 RBIs that he just never gets. Or, the always consistent 660 plate appearance, 100 RBI per season since 2021, Manny Machado then is, twists his ankle and he's out, for 2 months or something. Like, just never know, but you kind of got to pick your spots, your favorites. But I will tell you from this group, I do like Matt Olson. I do like Matt Olson for, everything I'm going to do with the Braves. I haven't really been able to click on Bryce Harper. Anytime I want to click on Freddie Freeman, someone usually is kind of already grabbed them. And then I love Austin Riley. I mean, he's the guy that just these past 2 years with, the 2 years ago injury was fluky. Remember, he got hit. I think it was a Jack Cochano.
Yeah.
Hit him hand, broke his wrist. And then, last season injury, I feel like he's still young. He's still good. I mean, he was averaging 36 home runs and 115 RBI for a few seasons there until the injuries.
So you are on the Braves mojo this year.
I'm on the Braves mojo big time. I'm on
a break. I think I am too. I think I'm feeling it. I think there's going to be some good stuff happening there. So, because it was bad. Man, it was bad the last couple of years. So,
yeah, I mean,
it needs to flip.
Yeah, how long can something like that go, right? When you have so much talent, I think maybe heard somebody say something about the training staff, the doctors, or just like something, but they're not like out there sabotaging, right? Obviously, there's got to be some good luck coming.
Yeah, I really don't know what to do. Obviously, they let go of the coach, so there's going to be some vibe changes. I don't know if Walt Weiss was the right guy, but we shall see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a great tier with these veterans. It's good to get those solid picks, especially if you plan on taking other risks. Vinny Pascatino, you mentioned, I think is incredibly solid. He's just like Alonso, like Pete Alonso, but lefty version. He's just always driving guys in. He's, averaging 100 RBI the last couple seasons. And that's with, of course, you got Bobby Witt in front of you, but that's with like missing, I think, 30 plus games two seasons ago. I think he had like 97 RBI. It's like 120 games. He's really solid. The walls moving in is also a good thing. So yeah, really good stuff in this tier. The next tier, it's a pretty small one, and we can kind of just touch on it really quick. These are guys going between 100 and 150 overall. 150 is basically the end of the 10th round in 15 teamers. And you've got Alex Bregman. You got Michael Bush, now teammates, maybe even hit next to each other. You got Jordan Westberg, Eugenio Suarez, still unsigned. And then Yandy Diaz. Anything there?
Yeah. I just drafted Alex Bregman in my CLQ DC. Don't love it, but don't hate it. He's kind of, if you get stuck at third base, just a nice guy to plug in. You know what you're getting. I'm a little worried about Wrigley. It's kind of turning into a pitcher's ballpark. The wind seems to blow in a lot more than it blows out now, and it's obviously, there's no short porch. So I think it's the longest foul poles in the majors. And that's where he got a lot of his power. But guy's a really good hitter in a great lineup. Going to play every day if he stays healthy. So I like him. Really like Michael Bush. Just the only issue with him would be the platoon risk. I don't know how much of a platoon risk it can be with Tyler Austin, but you want to talk about a skills increase. Jump the barrel rate from 11% in 24 to 17% in 25. Hard hit rate from 39.9 to 47.3. That's some significant power increase and might just be getting started, but 81 WRC plus against left-handed pitching, that could limit him and his at-bats for the year, getting pulled, things like that. So like them. And then the only other one I'll touch on is good old boring Yandy. If you need batting average, man, is he a good pick? He gets it done, hits the ball on the ground, but I would not expect the home run numbers that he had last year that he had at the minor league deal at Steinbrenner Park. So I believe the home run number will drop back to the high teens for Yandy.
Yeah, and I mean, in my article, positional tiers, I don't know where I came up with this craziness, but basically I said he's got the build and power of a Tyler O'Neill and the plate discipline and contact skills of a Stephen Kwan. It's just like a very rare breed. A guy that just looks like a beast. He's never had a double-digit barrel rate, but he is just, I mean, he hit 25 homers last year. He's like, 300 a season is like easy. He moved to the Trop, but he's just like, he's nice and solid. I feel like he does get some like injury stuff here and there. So something to kind of, keep an eye on. So he's all right. He's solid. Not somebody I'm going out of my way to click. Jordan Westberg, I like. I wish he was a little bit more affordable. I feel like if, not blaming roster resource, but if he wasn't listed as second, I feel like in that batting order where he is now, and of course that's not exactly indicative of what exactly is going to happen, but it's a possibility. It's a nice slot for him to kind of step in there. He could have had a really good season last year. His pace, by the way, was insane. Like he only played 85 games, 350 or so plate appearances. He had almost 60 runs. He had almost 20 homers. Like Jordan Westberg is pretty good.
Yeah. I think if his draft cost was about 10, 20 picks later, or if he still had second base eligibility, that second, third was so nice last year. I'd be all in on him. I just, you know, he's another young guy. Can he stay healthy? You know, 2 years ago, fractured hand. That's a little fluky. Last year, strained hamstring, out for 45 days. Sprained ankle, up for 29 days. Those are injuries that are starting to get a little questionable, you know, about health moving forward. So that pace, I did not even realize that that pace was as strong as it was, but that's some elite numbers when he's playing. But he's going to be solid, but probably a risk I'm not taking at pick, where is he at, 126?
Yeah, it's Swisher was like in the 150s, in the 10th round would be nice. Go pairs well with a, you know, a 1982 Alonzo and a tier five. These are guys going 150 to 200, $7 to $10 on the auctions spectrum there. I kind of, in my article, I kind of call this the money tier, but yeah, the more I look at it now, it's like the, you know, there are a couple of guys that can maybe produce some profit. You just, you know, good luck figuring out who it's going to be, who's going to give you the massive profit. And
we already talked about who it was, Bled. It's Wilson Contreras. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the, like, hey, just stay healthy tier, guys. You've got, you know, Wilson Contreras, you know, Royce Lewis fits that mold as well. He, by the way, I just did 12 team rankings, kind of built around the OC, the online championship on NFBC. And there's a massive difference in ADP between Royce Lewis and DCs and OCs. I think his OC ADP is around 160 and he's going around 200 in DCs. So of course, you know, kind of go for the gusto there. So yeah, those are a couple interesting guys. I really like Alec Burleson. Writing this article, it had me digging into all these guys a little bit more, and he's just somebody that really stood out to me. I think Jonathan Aranda's a stud as well. Just again, there's just such a glut of all these guys. It's just so difficult to make decisions.
Yeah, I really like Aranda, and he hit lefties for the first time last year, but his defense is so bad. He's going to have to get stuck at DH. Go back and forth with Yandy. That's my only concern with him. But, you know, talk about breaking out before he fractured his wrist last year. Looked the part, but he's a butcher in the field. And it kind of goes back to our statement at the beginning of the pod about the defense and how important it is. Another guy I like, another giant, so I sound like a homer, but I am very bullish on their offense this year, is Matt Chapman. His skills actually look pretty good. He just can't stay on the field anymore. He keeps getting hurt with hand issues. But he, his barrel rate's declining, but his contact rate's improving. So that should, you know, bring that batting average up from a 240 to hopefully about a 260. And he can stay on the field. You know, it could be an easy 20, 25 homers, you know, 80 runs and 80 RBIs, you know, past pick 150 at third base could be value.
Yeah, Matt Chapman, absolutely in the conversation here. And yeah, exactly. Just stay healthy. Think good things hopefully will happen for him and a lot of those Giants hitters there. Noelvi Marte, I wanted to ask you about him because I've just been all over the place with him. I've ranked him as low as 120 back in November and then did more digging and then dropped them down. And I don't know. I don't know if that's a risk I want to take. I think the upside is really nice, but I think the struggles against lefties, he's got a 64 career WRC plus, is something that's an issue. And he kind of just disappears at times and gets moved around the lineup, sits occasionally. Like, I don't know what to expect from him this year in this offense in general.
Yeah. He's a big question mark. And, you know, you still just, I can't get out of my head about how bad he was when he came back from the steroids suspension. What is he? Better year last year. Exit velocity is obviously quite a bit lower from when he got called up and looked really good. Got suspended the next year. You know, when you're looking at someone like that before pick 150 with the question marks behind it, and you mentioned this, our last pod together was about the team context in Cincinnati's really bad as well. That it's going to hurt the counting stats. So I just, it's nice to have a little speed, nice to have some power, nice to have the Great American Small Park, but I won't be taking any of him in the top 150.
Are you interested at all in Royce Lewis?
Interested, yes, but at the right price. He would probably have to fall in order for me to click it. I don't think I'd be clicking him at price. you know, in a 12-teamer, I would definitely be willing to take the chance. But in the 15-teamers, you want to talk about soft tissue issues. 2023, strained hammy, 13 games. 2024, strained quad, 68. 2024, strained groin, 24. 2025, strained hammy, 50. another one in 25, strained hammy, 18. But there seems like there's a pretty big soft tissue issue there that's not getting hit with the ball in your hand, you know, or whatever that is. So, you know, we all know in Fab Leagues how difficult it is when we have to hold an injury for more than 7 to 10 days. The risk, the upside's there, but yeah, probably not for me.
It's interesting how we have our own biases on things, even when a couple of situations that might be very similar, like, but just different players, and then we have our biases for or against, even though it's for the same reason. And an example of that would be, I know Evan Carter has chronic back issues, even though he's like, you know, just barely, you know, turned 21 or, you know, or whatever he is now, pretty young. And I've just been staying away. I'm like, oh, that guy will never stay healthy. Back problems, I just don't want to deal with it. Such a young age, it's just not looking good for him in his career. Yet I know that Royce Lewis, a top prospect, has had these lower body injuries issues since high school. He's here from, you know, he's from Southern California, Orange County area. He's had these issues since then, and then through college. And yet here I am, like, you know, that GIF, like, I'll freaking do it again. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, I'll tell you this. He will not be, if he's healthy and he's not hitting seven.
No.
He's hitting seventh in Atlanta.
Yeah, he's a cornerstone in that team. They need him to be good. So if he's playing, and I think what you hold on to, Vlad, is, you know, the same thing. And one of the reasons you're so good, especially in 12s, is that upside. You're willing to take that risk on that gut feeling. And his per plate appearance when he came up, I mean, he was a top 10 player in the league. He looked like a first round pick, but he's really tailed off skills wise as well as health wise since that. But like I said, 12 team league replacement value, sign me up. 15 team DC or Fab, yeah, no thanks.
Wasn't it like, it was just 2 years ago, right? He's coming off that half season, and I mean it was crazy. The hype for him. I mean, he'd come off a, what, 60-game sample where he hit, like, 309, hit all those bombs, like, at a, you know, Judgian pace, Ruthian, I guess. And then last year, yeah, still some buzz, but mostly it was like, no way, never again. But then his teammate, everybody was, you know, never again on Byron Buxton, and he was one of the best, you know, pound-for-pound, you know, points players in fantasy last year.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and I've been putting this in my research. I'm trying to figure out how to quantify it, is bat speed. When Royce Lewis came up in 23, his bat speed was 75.3 miles an hour. The next 2 years, it dropped 2 miles an hour to 73.3 and 73.6. Why? I don't understand that. There's no back issues. There's no hand issues. These are all lower body issues. So maybe just hasn't been healthy. But yeah, in that 58 games in 23, Vlad, 15 homers, 52 mm-hmm. RBIs. Like, mm-hmm. The guy looked like, you know, a top 10 player.
He did start to pick up the pace. He was stealing bases at random, like towards the last month of the season. He was just really running. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting profile. This is still a guy that, you know, he knows most of the state of Minnesota, you know, that is just mad at him. I see, like, mean tweets about Royce Lewis all the time, even, you know, from people in the press out there. And, you know, this is a guy that – He's got a lot to prove. You know, he's a first overall pick. He's just been, you know, nowhere for all these years, and he used to be so good. So I don't know. I'm not quite ready to give up, but, you know, I also don't want to make it a Royce Lewis podcast. We got a couple more tiers here on our Friday night.
Keep on moving.
Next, we've got the 200 to 250 overall guys. Let me know anyone that stands out to you here. You got Sal Stewart, Munetaka Murakami, Addison Barger, Matt Schock, Jose Caballero, Kyle Manzardo, and Caleb Durbin.
Are you moving Shaw down after the Bregman signing, or is that where he's living in your rankings?
No. So since that's already a week and a half, this my ranking in the article, people got to go to the VDP rankings. I've got him probably, I think, 30 after his ADP. Before that, I had him a little bit above his ADP. So no, I'm not. I haven't been drafting Matt Shaw, and I won't. I continue to not. Although he could get traded.
Yeah, or Nico Horner can get traded. But yeah, I'm reading he's going to play some outfield. Really no interest in Matt Shaw at that price. I thought he'd drop more. Someone I've been trying to take in every draft champions is Jose Caballero. I don't believe he's going to be a fab league guy for me, but in the draft champions, literally having, I think, the nuts on position eligibility, you know, third, second, short, outfield.
Third.
And with Anthony Volpe's injury, he's got a pretty good runway to start the season off playing. And he's just an Aaron Boone guy. Like, he's going to play. He's not great, but he's not going to be a zero power guy. But when he's on the field, he is going to run. He's going to run. A great defender. So he's going to find his way onto the field, whether it's short, whether it's second, whether it's third, whether it's some outfield. So I do really like him in draft champions. What about you?
I love Jose Caballero. You know, hopefully I just don't have Chandler Simpson on my team at that point, because you can't have them both. But so check out this crazy stat. So we all know that last year he led the majors in stolen bases, right? He had 49 bags. And the year before, he was second in the majors. He led the AL because Elly De La Cruz had that massive, whatever, 67 stolen base season. Caballero had 44. So last season, he led the league and he stole five more bases, but he did it in 113 fewer plate appearances. I mean, this guy could do whatever he wants on the Pets.
Yeah. Again, not the best hitting profile. You know, what's crazy is how many caught stealings he's had. 2 years ago, 16 caught stealings, 44 stolen bases. Last year, 11 caught stealings, 49 stolen bases. So, you know, still successful, but you usually don't see that many caught stealings under that, you know, big of a speed profile.
Yes, exactly 60 attempts each of the last two seasons. It was funny. I remember I was doing projections last year and having to, like, you know, I was going through, like, caught stealings. I was like, oh, my God, Bobby Witt is, like, led the majors the previous year in caught stealing. Like, yeah, these guys just have a green light, and they'll make most of them and miss some. But, yeah, I think Caballero, like you said, is a Boone guy. He's going to play. Like, he's just going to find a way to get him in that lineup. He's not just going to be a strict against lefties platoon. So, I definitely like that. Sal Stewart's getting a lot of buzz. I feel like he's moving up in drafts. I think something about, I don't know, another one of those guys that put on weight. What's your whole thing on somebody says, you know, I added blah, 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 whatever. Or Matt McClain, 12 pounds of muscle. What does that mean to you? Noise or?
Or my favorite, I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, I know I say that every morning I wake up, but I'm a shape, all right. I don't really pay attention to that. I'm actually a little intrigued in Sal Stewart. His minor league numbers were really good, really good bat to ball profile. And then his hard hit data in a very small sample size in the major leagues, 95 mile an hour exit velocity. That's yikes good. I don't know how that translates. And I know I already said I don't like the Reds lineup, but I think they're going to give him every chance to rake, and I think he's going to be one of their best hitters. So if he falls at all, or if I'm really looking for a corner guy right there, I'm definitely intrigued on this profile. You know, and not to mention he had 17 stolen bases in the minors last year. Getting that from the corner, and I don't know how much he's going to run in the majors. It's hard to project that, but 22 years old, those are the type of people or type of players that like to run when they're new into the league.
Oh, and with Sal Stewart, it's that he actually lost 20 pounds.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's something he did in the off season. And I guess Matt McClain took his muscle. So we'll see how that
maybe
works.
He can send me an email about how to lose 20 pounds.
Kyle Manzardo, he is somebody that can mash. He's had a really nice season his first year. What, 530 plate appearances, 27 home runs. I think he could flirt with 30 for sure. Showed us, proved us that he is not a platoon guy. He's there to stay. But then again, if you're a platoon guy on the Guardians, you know, something's wrong with you.
Yeah. You know, 83 WRC plus against lefties last year. So he improved because he was a zero basically against lefties. you know, the runs is what scares me. 47 runs in 142 games last year. Is that number going to get better with that offense? He seems, I mean, that screams of just a base clogger there with a low batting average. So probably going to be a pass for me there. I like this, some of the skills increase, the barrel rate, this, you know, the swing decisions, the line drive rate. But when you 47 runs is crippling from that position right there. And I had him for a little bit. And I did not realize how bad it was until it was too late and it hurt me.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's something of note, because a lot of times when we're tracking our teams as we draft, for those of us who use draft software or Excel or whatever, you usually got to try to be cognizant of that mix of runs and RBI, because in the majors, there are, you know, obviously more runs than runs batted in. And in your 80th, 90th percentile category targets, your runs will always be a little bit higher than RBI. But you always want to be, you know, look at that balance, like the balance within making sure you don't have any, you know, too many leadoff guys and not enough part of the lineup guys, so that you have enough power. And you know, that whole balance. So I think that's really important.
And we just, as a fantasy community, I think have a hard time paying attention to runs. That's the first category we kind of ignore. So yeah, it matters. I was in a draft with you, and you drafted Murakami on the White Sox. Talk to me. Is that a target for you? Is that just a profile build? I know it was kind of a YOLO team. You're having some fun with it, but I can't believe all their projections have 30 homers for someone that with that strikeout ratio.
Oh, that was the 400 DC, right?
Yeah.
We were in? Yeah. That was already, you know, I did draft some sort of safer guys towards the middle, but I just felt like that was a team that, you know what, I've got a lot of speed, more than I need here, and I've got really strong batting average bats. Let me just get somebody here at third base who I know or most likely is going to just hit me a lot of home runs. Maybe I get a little lucky in the batting average. Maybe it's not going to be as bad as everybody says, because that's the one thing. Maybe I do it stubbornly, but if the whole world is trying to tell me that it's going to be like this, I'm going to go in and at least question it at the very least. I don't want to, you know, be told exactly what's going to happen, because as we know in this world, it doesn't always work out like that.
Yeah. And wasn't Lindy Hinkleman famous for kind of not ignoring batting average, but, you know, hey, five more hits one year compared to another is going to change the guy's batting average extensively. So how am I going to try to predict the luck on that? So I'm not going to worry about that. And if I spike it, then I got all the value.
Yeah, it's volatile. There are certain players, if you've got like the high contact guys, you know, 83%+ contact rate, you usually have a good idea of sort of like where the batting average is going to land. And, you know, you know that, you know, Luis Arias, Stephen Kwan, you know, these guys are typically going to be a plus in batting average. Alejandro Kirk. But then there are the guys that can waver anywhere. Like those are the scariest profiles to me, the really volatile guys where, listen, maybe they earn $15 every year, but you have no idea where these stats are coming from. Like one year, the runs are 30 lower, but the RBIs are 30 higher. Now they're stealing more bases and hitting less home runs. It's you know, I don't like that volatility.
Yeah.
Tier 7, $2 to $5 guys, $250 to $300 overall. I'll throw out some names. Tell me anyone that sticks out to you. Spencer Steer, Jake Berger. These are first basemen first. I'll name the first baseman. Spencer Steer, Jake Berger, Andrew Vaughn, Ryan O'Hearn, Arias, Nolan Chenuel. And then I will mention that what's crazy is you would think we'd have so many more first base, third base eligible guys. Miguel Vargas is the only one, at least to start the year.
That is crazy. I didn't know that.
Maybe Devers.
Devers is only first.
Oh, so yeah. So it's, yeah. Something interesting I noted.
The two names that stand out to me from what you just said were Andrew Vaughn. And then I'll touch on Nolan Chenuel a little bit. I think Andrew Vaughn's getting discounted because people don't really realize how good he was in Milwaukee once he got over there. He got sent down to the minors for the White Sox. It's hard to do. But his second half, you know, batted 308, 9 homers, 46 RBIs, cut the K rate down to 14.6%. you know, barrel rate, double digits, hard hit rate near 50%, good swing decisions. I think he's going to be extreme value if he lives right here. You know, not the sexiest profile, but would I be shocked if he had 90 RBIs and, you know, and 65 runs and had 25 homers, batting 270? The guy was a top three pick, wasn't he, out of Cal?
He's a great, he was a third overall pick. I've not been an Andrew Vaughn guy at all, but I really like him for the price that he's going. Like, just looking at the context of where he's likely to hit in the lineup as a right-handed bat, if everybody is healthy, if you've got William Contreras and Christian Yelich ahead of you, probably always on base, you're driving guys in. And then when you get on base, Sal Frelick is going to drive you in. So it's a really good position to be in. When he first came up with the Brewers, he was like unconscious. He was just, you know, just went absolutely ape crap. And otherwise, I have to click this button, you know, this thing on a pod that says, you know, explicit language. So I'd rather not do that. I don't know, kids in the car or whatever. And I like Andrew Vaughn. And like you said, the barrel rate was high. Everything was good. So just, yeah, Milwaukee just kind of just fits the bill. I'm into it.
Yeah. Real quick, Nolan Shanwell, I just read an article on him about the management want him to focus on bat speed and bat speed only. Interesting guy because the hard hit's so bad, but bat speed the last 3 years went from 64.9 to 65.2 to 67.5 last year. Barrel rate 2 to 3 to 4.5. Exit velocity 85 to 86, 87.5. So, you know, 12 homers, 53 RBIs don't look good, but if he can get to a point where he's lifting the ball and, you know, driving in some runs, it could be pretty interesting because the zone contact's elite, which means he doesn't strike out. Last year, 12.5% K rate, non-zero speed, and can be good batting average. So he's an interesting one, but I don't know if he can get the bat speed up and up because that's a Luis Arraez bat speed, not a first baseman bat speed.
You know who else had who saw incredible bat speed last year and end up being the top second baseman? That was Bryce Turang. His went from 66, which was just horrendously awful near the bottom of the league, to 71. It was great improvement. His average exit velocity or his hard hit rate went from like 30 to 47, and he hit 21 bombs. He had an incredible season. So it's funny that I'm not interested or clicking on Shanwell, and I think it's a being burned the last couple of years that he's just a guy that's just kind of there. And, you know, even if he's got Trout and Adele and everybody in the lineup ahead of him, I feel like he doesn't really help my lineup. Like
I don't want him in my lineup.
Yeah.
I feel you there.
It'd be nice to see him do something. Third baseman in this tier, Max Muncy, Kazuma Okamoto, who seems like people like him. Seems like he'll probably play every day and a little bit more kind of all around put together, maybe a higher floor than Murakami. What do you think? Do you know anything about Okamoto?
I know his hit profile is about the polar opposite of Murakami. Very good contact, has power. I can't do it until I see the velocity and how they handle it. But you know, you look at two third basemen on here for me. Brett Beatty, I think, got completely screwed by the Mets when they end up signing Bichette because he looked like he was really breaking out. You know, the barrel rate last year went from 5.4 to 12.8%. Still hits the ball on the ground too much, but the exit velocity jumped 4 miles an hour from 86.6 to 90.7. So I really think that he was on the verge of being someone. That doesn't mean he still can't. I just don't know how they're going to treat him and Vientos in that lineup. But he was a target of mine before that signing. And the other one is Max Muncy. Dodger great. And you know how much that pains me to say that, Vlad. So once he got his glasses in the second half, I believe, he was kind of it was early in the year when he got the glasses. Then he got injured. I had that bone bruise and then of oblique, but he started to really drop his K numbers. I mean, lowest of his career last year at 21%. And he just still hammers the ball, high launch angle, a lot of homers, hard hit over 50. He was very interesting, the fact that it seemed like his eyesight really fixed some of the strikeout issue. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's amazing what happens when you can see the ball. I think it's fantastic. I think anytime you have an opportunity, just as a whole, just invest in the Dodgers offense. If he gets hurt and you have to drop him, so be it. But I mean, like, this lineup is just so freaking deep, and he's, you know, I mean, he's not hitting top three like he once was, and you know, the 30 plus home run seasons are gone. Still a big walk rate guy, profile's a little bit different, always will kill you on average, but for the right build, I guess you could say, if you need you want some power, you want some of that Dodgers action, then dig in.
Anyone else stand out
In this tier? Not particularly. I was just want to point out what a crazy career Carlos Correa has had. Just wild. Like, just look at his like runs, RBIs the last couple of seasons. Just like he's not even there, and he's hitting in the middle of the Twins lineup. It's really crazy. And then how he was a first overall pick, stole like almost 30 bases in the first two seasons, and then I think he even has 10 in the like six or seven seasons since. Just kind of a weird profile.
He might not have 10 attempts the last six or seven seasons.
That's what I mean.
Just very weird.
I like Mark Vientos, and I like Brett Beatty. I don't like their situation. Kind of stinks. Super quick, any thoughts on just the Rangers in general? Like, Berger was hurt. Hand thing last year, wasn't himself. Can you see him bouncing back a little bit and just not being a platoon guy?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite my favorite Berger one was when Matt Modica and I had Jake Berger on our team, and every time he hit a homer, I got an emoji of a burger and a bomb. that was fun. I missed that. His numbers actually were surprisingly decent. I thought he had fallen off more than he had. Again, the oblique injury scared the crap out of me. We're spraying wrists into the year, but hits the ball hard, 14% barrel rate, it's pretty good. Contact rate in the mid-80s. So I don't know why I feel this, Vlad. I kind of feel the opposite that you do on the Orioles about the Rangers. I feel that just some bad juju. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's carryover from last year, but
you just think still? You feel it still?
I still have that weird feeling about that team. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just all the injury-prone guys with the Seager, the Evan Carter, Adelise is gone now. I don't know. I'm trying to put my finger on it. I really got to dive in because Berger's profile at the cost is actually very appealing power-wise, when power is hard to come by.
You know what? I mean, so the pitching is nasty. I think if the pitching stays healthy, they were one of the best staffs in the league last year. They got DeGrom, Eovaldi, Jack Leiter's taking another step up. They add lefty and Mackenzie Gore. Like, I mean, it's a really, really sick staff. And you know what? I just looked at the hitting. I don't think I've looked at it in a while. It is pretty gross. Like, something happens to Wyatt Langford. I mean, like, it is kind of gnarly. Like, you're still betting Jock Peterson cleanup against righties. Like, the market, like the NFBC market is like completely out. Even though he's UT only, you still have a guy that's showing to be cleanup, even if it's in a strong side platoon, and he's not even going in the top 500 overall. Like, I feel like I trust the NFBC market more than anything. So
starting second baseman Josh Smith, that's pretty gross.
Yeah, I think from like a fantasy perspective, I don't know, maybe if you're talking real life and fantasy or both, but like, you're right. Like, from a fantasy perspective, you're right. I don't love it. Like, Danny Jansen, is your upgrade over Jonah Heim. Josh Young, can he ever stay healthy? It's all pretty gross. By the way, Nimmo is like a whole year older than Corey Seager. I had no idea.
What can go wrong with those two on the same team?
Let's wrap things up here. Tier 8. These are guys going after pick 300 in the NFBC. These are guys after round 20 in 15 teamers, after round 24, 25 in 12 teamers. We kind of know the names. I'll tell you the guys that I'm kind of not really interested in are even the ones that are have lots of position eligibility, like a Brooks Lee, a Zach McKinstry, I don't know, they Josh Smith, these guys just don't do it for me. I want a little, like, you know, pizzazz in this. You know, I'm still buying into Jordan Lawler. It's my dude. He's going to, you know, get out there in the outfield. Hopefully he can, you know, stay healthy, make the team, or maybe it's just another Royce Lewis, who knows. But that's the type of risk I want to take in this region. And I do like Jonathan India bounce back. I think that he is, you know, the market's coming up on him. He used to have an ADP of around 400. Now it's closer to 350. I think some stuff came out, you know, his manager talking about how they didn't really give him a, you know, fair chance on stuff. Man, I don't know why I'm blanking on the details, but there's like a whole thing that kind of excuses India's rough start. What doesn't excuse is like he didn't even, I don't think he even attempted a stolen base last year.
Strange year, very strange year. I don't really know how to value Jonathan India. I just wish the Diamondbacks like Jordan Lawler are anywhere near as much as you do, because they tend to hate the guy, especially they just won't give him a chance. It's kind of fascinating for their best prospect to be treated like that. A couple names in here I like, Connor Norby.
Yes.
There's some chatter about him possibly playing first base as well. You know, guy can hit, and he ran a little bit, so give him a chance to play. Again, struggling against lefties, but Marlins are kind of the perfect team to kind of play through that. Guy I'm targeting quite a bit right now in draft champions is Willie Castro, with the third base, second outfield. Rockies paid him. They have a huge void at third base, at second base. You got to believe he's going to get every chance to play every day. We all know what Coors does to the batting average. We know he runs a little bit. We know he's got some power, just kind of that perfect guy in a draft champions around 19 or 20 to really kind of put that well-rounded different position guy on your team.
Yeah. And most of these guys are in your 12 teamer. They're going to be on and off the waiver wire all season. Right. So just, you know, something to keep in mind. And, you know, even like Connor Norby, you and I both like him, but just remember this. There's one thing you can take away from this episode, you know, is hopefully there's more than just this, but like if you're in like week, it's like the third week of April and Connor Norby is just going absolutely crazy. Just having incredible, you know, like don't spend $100+ and $150+ in a 12 teamer on Connor Norby, because it's probably going to come down back to earth. Then someone will, you know, drop them, and then you can pick them up back in, you know, like a lot of these guys are here for a reason. They're sure there'll be a breakout or two, but like, you know, Josh Bell having a 4 home run week is not a reason to spend $60 on Josh Bell, because he's going to go back to being Josh Bell in a week. So something to keep in mind during fab season.
Yeah. We get so excited, and then chasing the previous week stats is the biggest drainer of fab there is, right?
Let me ask you this, just to wrap up with this, because we didn't get to do the catcher preview together. Your thoughts on Carter Jensen, have you, you know, looked at him at all, you know, plate appearance wise, you think he platoons, plays every day, gets sent down to the minors? This is a very intriguing, like he's popping up in all the prospect lists. Like we knew he was high, but now he's coming in real high and he looked good in his cup of tea last year. So how do you think he fits in with the Royals this year?
You know, I haven't got to him that closely yet. I've been trying to get two catchers a little earlier. It seems like he's going to be on a large side of a platoon, great power profile, a little worried about the swing and miss. I wish I had some more help for you on that, but I haven't really gotten to a point where I really need to look at him that closely. You know, I think my last guy on that tier is Kyle Teal, as my, what I'd like for my catcher too, when I tried to take him. And if I missed that, I was kind of waiting on that Ryan Jeffers group. So, yeah, I don't have enough feedback for you on Carter Jensen yet, but I know Sal's still going to play catcher, you know, at least half the time. So what do they want? They want both catchers in the lineup when Sal is catching. So it'll be interesting how they want to play that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And just, man, this Royals lineup with the dimensions changing there, it's going to be very interesting. A whole new Kauffman, a whole new world.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Anything else to wrap up on overall thoughts on first base and third base, how to attack it?
No, I mean, I think first base is very shallow after that if you miss out on a first base early, it's really hard to get one later. It's really hard to get backups in the draft champions too. So I like to get my first baseman early, but man, I've been chasing my tail in the draft champions trying to find a backup first baseman. It is a challenge. Third base is deep, but it's not, it's very top heavy, and then they're all the same guy after that. So find your guys. And then, like I said, you know, about the speed aspect, I mean, I need more speed, so I'm trying to get as much speed at those positions as I can. So anytime I see that, I'm kind of piqued. My interest is piqued.
Good stuff. So just kind of overall, I mean, we both like Vlad Guerrero Jr. Not sure what we think of Bryce Harper this year. I think Freddie Freeman's a pretty good value. Loving Vinny Pascantino. Jason loves Rafael Devers. Yandy Diaz, always solid. I'm a big Alec Burleson guy. We both love Wilson Contreras. Sal Stewart, somebody that intrigues us. Nolan Schanuel, good luck on picking up that bat speed. And then on the third base side, Jazz Chisholm, play him at second or third. We don't know yet, but we'll get back to you. Jose Ramirez, could this be the drop-off? We don't know. Austin Riley, Matt Olson, invest in the Braves. Jordan Westberg could be sneaky. Wish the price was a little bit lower. Royce Lewis, will you buy in Buxton on us? Hopefully. Murakami, let's see, 30-plus homers and maybe more than 220. We would really love that. Max Muncy, a little bit left in the tank. Jordan Lawler, one time, baby. And that is the first and third base preview. We'll be back next week, second and third. Take us out of here, Jay.
Well, it might be second and short since we just did first and third, Vlad, but I got you, buddy. It's late here on the West Coast. Great to be back on with you, Vlad. Love talking with you. This is, you know, the fun part, the research, you know, the labor of love that we put in to set our rankings, to set our draft boards, because, you know, once we're in draft season, it is go, go, go. So this is where the homework comes in to get us ready for that. So hopefully we helped everybody with their research, and appreciate everyone listening.
We'll be back next week. Talk second baseman and the shortstops. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.